Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We are broadcasting live from Boston's Fleet Center on the third day of the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, delegates will hear from Reverend Al Sharpton, Dennis Kucinich, Bill Richardson, and the star of the evening, John Kerry's running mate, John Edwards. The Democrats are clearly enjoying this spotlight they've had this week, but the Republicans are here too at the margins, and they are taking careful notes. The first line of the Bush campaign's defense is two blocks from the DNC, where the GOP mans a rapid response war room with 30 staffers making calls and blasting off press releases, rebutting anything they can lay a hand on or claim to. Republicans are sharpening their knives all week long and are ready to use them. Tonight on Point, we track all the Democrats' action on the floor and hear the Republican counter-strategy, the GOP assessment of all they have heard. Let's listen first to some sounds of the Democrats' convention, day three.
We are the patriots for the next revolution, which takes place in Boston and takes place with Senator Kerry and takes place with Senator Edwards.
We are protesting the protest zone because caging dissent is an affront to the idea of free speech. By encasing dissent, it demeans the courage of the people who want to stand up here and speak their minds.
Are we ready to take a stand and insist that we will not give up those rights for a political party, for an election, for a convention, for any reason? We are going to...
I'm also proud that just in a few hours, we're going to nominate a vice presidential candidate who grew up in a small town like so many others in the South. A man who knows the sweat of a hard day's work.
As I've reached out to people back home, I'm sometimes asked, why am I a Democrat? And why am I supporting John Kerry and John Edwards? And for me, it's pretty simple. I'm a Democrat because I believe every American owns a part of the American dream. I'm a Democrat because I believe we cannot settle, even when it's tempting to do so.
I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to my opportunity a little more than 24 hours from now to share with you and all of America a vision for how we're going to make this country stronger at home and respected in the world. That's exactly what we're going to do.
And that was Congressman Charles Rangel of New York, a delegate from Washington State protesting the fenced and caged official protest zone outside the convention hall. Congressman Dennis Kucinich of Ohio at a rally earlier today, Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Congressman Harold Ford Jr. of Tennessee, and Senator John Kerry arriving today in Boston. So, you've been listening. Are the Democrats sounding rock solid this week or open to attack? Where do you expect the GOP to aim its heavy fire? How strong or vulnerable is John Kerry? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me at the Fleet Center in Boston right now is Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, it's been quite a week. What do you think? What do you make of day three?
Well, you know, when you go around and hang around in restaurants and bars, you hear people say things like, I didn't see you at the GM reception. No, I was at the Textron lunch. Oh, were you? Well, how come you didn't? Did you make it to the Qualcomm breakfast?
Ooh, they're out to get Jack
Beatty's
goat.
There's a lot of money being spent here by corporations. It turns out that the McCain-Feingold bill had a loophole you could drive a Fleet Center through. That allows corporations to spend unlimited funds wining and dining senators. Dick Durbin, and Tom Edsel's story in the Post today has it, came out of at the Union Oyster House, a $19,000 lunch. That's quite a lunch.
Obama and Teresa Hines Carey. Lots of swooning over Obama today, and pretty good reports on her as well from what I've heard from delegates.
Yes, and someone made the point to me that she actually didn't shout in the microphone. The first person... You know, you don't have to shout in a microphone.
I can be reminded of that once in a while.
And that she really impressed people. But, you know, the dominant note here is fear and loathing of Bush. And there's even a sense that if Bush wins, it'll be a defeat for democracy in this way, that it'll mean you can do anything, you can screw up anyhow, as one guy told me, and still get reelected over a liberal Democrat. It'll mean the Democrats are essentially not wanted by the country, even when there's the best of reasons to want them. And it isn't just negative on Bush. The strong feeling I find from Kerry is from Labor, and that is because John Kerry is a Massachusetts Democrat, not like Jimmy Carter, not like Bill Clinton, Southern Democrats from right-to-work states. He talks Labor's talk. He is he's given put in amendments into a recent trade bill they wanted. They are ready to spend one union, SEIU, $65 million this year. They're going to put 2,000 volunteers for Kerry in Ohio. And they're really gearing up. And there's legislation in Congress that would make it easier to organize unions. It's got 204 sponsors, including 7 Republicans, and they want that on Kerry's desk.
So Labor lining up behind John Kerry, and George Bush still the great unifier here at this convention. Jack, let me turn to WBUR reporter Audie Murphy, who's been on the floor of the convention. Audie Cornish, excuse me, Audie. There's that other famous Audie, who's been on the floor and watching everything going on today. John Kerry arriving by boat across Boston Harbor from Logan Airport, I guess, to sort of bring back to mind his swift boat days in Vietnam.
He did. It was a dramatic entrance, but there was no sort of danger of having a Dukakis in the tank scenario. He arrived by water taxi. He was wearing a suit and looked quite comfortable because he was sharing the deck of that taxi with several of his crewmates from his Vietnam tour of duty. And he actually addressed the crowd at Pier 4 in the Charlestown Naval Yard right from the boat, saying he was excited and was saving his energy, actually, for tomorrow night.
This is his band of brothers, the Vietnam veterans he traveled with very effectively in Iowa and elsewhere, and they are, no doubt, all practically gathered here again in Boston.
They are, and it's also going to be a part of the convention. It's introducing the national security and international security elements of the convention and introducing the public to what they believe are the Vietnam experiences of Kerry that are helping shape who he is and potentially his approach to security and how that will differ from President Bush. And so you're going to see a lot of highlights from that past in imagery. Something like 12 to 13 retired generals and admirals are set to endorse him, and you'll be seeing them, some of them, take the stage today.
Including General Shalikashvili, who was warning before the war in Iraq that we needed many more troops there. What about response today to Barack Obama's keynote speech last night?
People very excited. I definitely saw a few people on the pier wearing these Kerry Obama pins, which I think were hastily made last night. A lot of good response to him. Also good response to Theresa Heinz Kerry. Heard words like brilliant. People who said that they were just really impressed with her approach and her passion. And as Jack mentioned, sort of being calm and just getting up there and making the case for her husband.
Very calm. A gracious performance a day or two after her shove it line when it mattered up there on the stage. Audie Cornish, wonderful to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. We turn now to the theme of the evening, the GOP pushing back, and Ken Millman, chair of the Bush 2004 reelection campaign. I spoke with him earlier and asked him what he made of the theme, stronger at home, respected abroad, that the Democrats are headlining at the convention this week.
Well, I think that they're an interesting slogan, and they're a slogan that I certainly agree with in terms of goals for our country. But a platform is not a slogan. A platform are policies that will make us accomplish those goals. And what a lot of people, I think, find troubling is how do you pay for the $2 trillion in new spending, particularly when you, as a U.S. senator, have voted 350 times for higher taxes? How do you send troops into battle in Afghanistan and Iraq and then vote against providing them the body armor they need to accomplish their mission? How do you vote 2 years after the first World Trade Center attack to gut our intelligence spending? How do you, on issue after issue after issue, take positions that are well outside of the mainstream?
But let's go to this slogan, even though it's a slogan, stronger at home. We've got John Ashcroft and others in the Bush administration warning that there could be a terrorist attack any time. Can the United States really be said to be stronger at home if that's the case?
I believe that we are, as the 9/11 Commission concluded, we're safer, but we're not yet safe. Because of the president's leadership, and it's not just George Bush. Look, it's Democrats and Republicans work together to give us a Department of Homeland Security, to give us a Patriot Act, to reform the federal government. We've had the biggest government reform in 40 years that have focused on exclusively making sure our country is safer and the American people are safer.
And what about respected in the world? That looks like a pretty
tough charge to rebut, given the polls from around the world that show a very high degree of animosity toward the United States. Is John Kerry on to something there?
Something similar occurred in the early 1980s. You remember when Ronald Reagan wanted to have Pershing missiles deployed in Europe, and the response in European capitals was huge marches, calling Ronald Reagan a cowboy. It's an outrage. And in fact, President Reagan's vision helped make sure that Europe was more secure and more peaceful. And I think that the same thing is true here. Obviously, we face a very serious threat, as the 9/11 Commission reported. And ultimately, the president's vision will not only make sure we're safer at home, but it'll make sure that, frankly, as the world unites in this battle against terrorism, the Europeans are safer too.
Ken Miman, let me ask you. Bill Clinton said this week, we of Democrats, we think the role of government should be to give people the tools and to create the conditions to make the most of their lives. Do you, as a top Republican, agree?
I do. I think what we disagree with President Clinton on that are what are the tools? And I don't know that government gives you the tools. I think that the government creates the conditions whereby people have the tools. Certainly it is government is responsible for making sure that folks are getting the education that they need to be able to take advantage of their God-given abilities. And certainly government's role is to make sure that people who can't help themselves or people that are down on hard times are provided with a decent living and don't have to needlessly suffer. And certainly government's role is to do all those things. The question you have to ask yourself is wealth created in government in Washington or is wealth created outside in America? And what we believe is that wealth is created outside of Washington. Government can be involved. Government can provide some mechanisms to help people. But the question is, what happens when government gets too big, takes too much, and gives you the orders?
That's so President Bush would not roll back tax cuts for those making $200,000 plus, obviously.
I think that the President Bush would not. I think that's right. And there's a reason he wouldn't. And the reason is, first of all, a lot of those folks, the majority of those folks earning more than $200,000 a year, they're not wealthy individuals living in the suburbs. They're small business people that file as subchapter S corporations that are responsible for 3 out of 4 new hires in this country. Take away their money, they have less money to hire people.
Kim, let me ask you another big theme the Democrats are putting up this week, Lifetime of Service by John Kerry. Military service in particular, John Kerry went to Vietnam. George W. Bush did not. Does that matter?
Well, I honor John Kerry's service. I've always said that. I think everybody said that. And that's certainly something that he did that was wonderful for his country. But fundamentally, this election is not about George Bush or John Kerry personally. It's about the future of this country. And so much more relevant to me is not what Senator Kerry did 30 or 40 years ago. What's relevant is what he did over the last 20 years, because that is a good indication of what he'll do if he's president.
Majority of Americans saying this week that America is on the wrong track, headed in the wrong direction. Are you guys running confident, running scared? How do you feel about the Democratic
challenge? I think it's going to be a close election, but I also think that the right track number today is about 7 points higher than it was in the summer before Bill Clinton was reelected. And so when you look at the polling numbers, what you see is the president's approval is 52%, Ronald Reagan's is 52% at this point in 1984. Right track number, as I said, about where it was in 1996, the summer before Clinton was reelected. I think you got a country that is relatively closely divided on politics. I think when you look at some of the issues, that it's not as closely divided. I think that Americans overwhelmingly agree with George Bush and not with John Kerry that it's wrong to raise taxes almost $1 trillion in your first 100 days in office. Americans overwhelmingly agree with George Bush that taking the battle of the terrorists abroad keeps us safer at home. They overwhelmingly agree that if you send troops into battle, you ought to provide them with the tools they need to succeed. So these are going to be important questions where we'll have a big debate.
Ken Miman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Ken Miman, chair of the Bush 2004 reelection campaign. We're talking tonight about Republicans watching the Democrats at their convention. Jack Beatty will be doing the same thing about 30 days from now when the Republicans sit down in New York. So turnabout will be fair play. But here we are, Bush's top man, Ken Miman. He says, hey, a slogan is not a strategy.
Yes, and he also said that John Kerry is going to raise taxes $1 trillion in his first 100 days. I don't want people to get apoplexy at home. That, of course, is a figure of speech. Over the course of 10 years, he will raise $1 trillion from essentially withholding the taxes from the 2% of taxpayers, 3% of taxpayers who earn over $250,000 a year.
So hold on. It's not all coming down quite yet, but we are hearing tonight how the GOP is pushing back, the strategy that they will unfold to push back in the months ahead, the GOP counterpunch, as we broadcast live from the Democratic National Convention. You can join the conversation tonight. You've been listening. Are the Democrats sounding rock solid, are open to attack? And where do you see John Kerry's vulnerabilities? How do you expect Republicans to respond to the Democrats' celebration of anti-Bush unity? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention with all the action from the floor. And tonight, looking at the Republican pushback to this convention, the GOP counterpunch. You can join our conversation. Democrats, where do you expect the GOP counterstrike? Do you hear it hitting hard tonight or not? And Republicans, what's the critique you're licking your chops to hear? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's duck down to the podium for just a minute, where Martin O'Malley, the Democratic mayor of Baltimore, is at the microphone.
It's your police commissioner. It's your mayor. This is our duty, and we do it proudly, and we can do it well, but not without the support of our federal government. We need a president who will stand with America's cities, with our firefighters, with our police officers, and with our families. We need a president who will make America strong at home. We need John Kerry. On September 11th, 1814, as Washington, D.C. burned to our south during the War of 1812, the people of Baltimore, 60% of us immigrants, one out of five of us free black citizens of a still as yet very imperfect country, successfully defended the United States of America on our own. It was an amazing American feat in a distant war. But 200 years later, in the war against terrorism, one city cannot do it alone. My friends, John Kerry knows we cannot properly fund America's homeland security on local property taxes and fire hall bingos.
Baltimore Mayor Martin O'Malley addressing the delegates as they flow into the hall tonight. Later tonight, John Edwards, Al Sharpton, Dennis Kucinich, and more. We're looking tonight at the GOP counterpunch. It's out there already. It will be mounting, of course, in the weeks and months ahead. Joining me for that conversation right now, live from the Fleet Center in Boston, is Matthew Continetti, columnist for the Conservative Weekly Standard. Welcome, Matthew Continetti. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And also with us tonight, Scott Hoganson, spokesman for the Republican National Convention, a member of the staff of the Republicans' Rapid Response Center right next door to the Fleet Center. Scott Hoganson, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, Tom.
So describe your setup. You're a couple blocks from here.
Right.
How are you pushing back already, even while the Democrats are in session here in Boston, Scott?
We're taking a multimedia approach to this, Tom. It involves print, daily paper, weekly paper, and magazine press. We've got television studio with live satellite uplink on the roof of our bunker. We've got a 24-hour radio booking operation that goes into effect. That's part of the reason that I'm here right now. And through these multimedia efforts, we're able to move a pretty strong message that's saying this convention is an extreme makeover of John Kerry's 19-year Senate record. They're trying to morph a well-defined liberal into a moderate in the hopes that more Americans will find him more appealing.
And you've got a website up saying all that, finding a way to punch every day. I'm looking here at this DemsExtremeMakeover.com. Michael Moore says Americans are ignorant. Michael Moore says American exports sadness and misery. And quoting Ed Gillespie, RNC chairman, John Kerry is a far-left duckling that hopes to emerge from his convention as a center swan.
Yeah.
Matthew Continetti, how do you see the heart of the Republican pushback that's been emerging in recent weeks and is certainly emerging this week?
I'm actually of the mind that the Democrats haven't given the Republicans that many opportunities to strike hard. I think the real question coming into the convention was, were we going to have a situation like we did in 2002 at the Wellstone Memorial, when kind of the angry id of the Democratic Party showed its face?
This is after Senator Paul Wellstone died in the airplane accident and crash, and Democrats, well, it just poured out at that funeral.
And it had a major effect, I believe, on the midterm elections. We haven't seen that so far. Bush bashing has been to a minimum on the floor of the Fleet Center. Mm-hmm. If you go outside, you'll see plenty of it.
It's a free country.
Exactly. But the Kerry campaign, I think, has been very successful in limiting the opportunities that Republicans can point to and say, aha, you're bashing Bush, you've gone over the edge.
Scott Hoganson, how about it? Is it well orchestrated enough? Have the Democrats lined up behind John Kerry's admonition to go positive this week? Is that cutting down on your targets of opportunity?
Not at all, Tom. As a matter of fact, earlier today,
never
our chairman...
Never concede an inch, Scott.
Never. Well, I tell you what we did today, Tom, it was quite amazing. Our chairman, Ed Gillespie, unveiled a new documentary about John Kerry and his many different positions on the situation in Iraq. What it is a lengthy documentary that includes John Kerry's own words and face from his multitudinous television news appearances over many, many years. And at one point, he says on television that he supports the president's efforts to disarm Saddam Hussein. He talks about the threat of Saddam Hussein, his weapons of mass destruction, and how they might fall into the hands of surrogates who could use them against the United States. And then all of a sudden, as he seeks the Democratic nomination for president, in classic fashion, he runs to the left, but he runs just a little too far to the left. And all of a sudden, this president that he had been praising for his actions now becomes the subject of a bunch of unfounded attacks. And so we have had unprecedented demand for this documentary. We've made it available to broadcasters as well.
But are you feeling kind of hard-pressed this week when you have Bill Clinton coming out with a big message of unity on the opening night, Barack Obama last night talking about we are all part of the United States of America, painting George Bush as the great divider, not the uniter that he came into office saying he would be? Does that leave you in a little bit of a hard place?
Not in the least. As a matter of fact, it illustrates the extreme makeover that I spoke about a couple of minutes ago. Mr. Obama actually said something that we agree with 100% last night. He said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said that we have to do everything we can to support our men and women in uniform, and we cannot and should not send them into battle without the proper support. Well, it was John Kerry who voted to send them into battle and yet voted against the $87 billion military appropriation to support them. And then he told America that he was proud that his running mate John Edwards had joined him in opposing the funding for the troops that John Kerry voted to send into combat.
I guess he says he wanted to fund the troops in another fashion, but that's a P.S. that doesn't get added here.
Well, I don't know what fashion you would want to support the troops outside of, you know, bullets and armor and, you know, health care for their dependents back home. And maybe he's got another way he wants to support them. He hasn't articulated that.
I guess in another bill. Matthew Continetti, how do you see the core Republican line of attack unfolding as we go forward in these weeks before the Republican National Convention? And when we get there, what's going to be the heart of it?
The heart of it is going to be John Kerry's voting record over the last 20 years in the Senate. It's funny, as the election has developed, we've had the two campaigns are talking about two different wars. The Kerry campaign always wants to talk about the Vietnam War. They think it inoculates Kerry from charges that he's been soft on national security. The Bush campaign wants to talk about the broad war on terror, of which Iraq is a component. And they're going to use Kerry's equivocations on that topic, cutting intelligence funds in the early 90s, military appropriations bills, and his somewhat schizophrenic position on the current Iraq war against him in the election this fall.
Do you think that the Democrats' positioning this week, their very careful attempt, as you say, to put out a more moderate sound, a very positive sound from Barack Obama and from Bill Clinton this week, right, notably, how deep, how good, how strong is the inoculation that gives them?
I actually think the Bush campaign will be watching very closely tonight when John Edwards takes the podium. In the months up, in the run-up to the Iraq war last year, Edwards was quite a hawk, a much more articulate hawk, if I do say so myself, than Kerry was. If Edwards switches tonight, if he buys into the Democratic critique that Bush lied, people died, I think you're going to see a new avenue of GOP attack opened up.
And that will be?
Well, that would be that Edwards has bought into not only the Democratic line, but also that he's like Kerry. He's an equivocator. That's something that Republicans haven't been able to say about John Edwards up to this point.
Matthew Continetti, Scott Hoganson, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation E.J. Dionne. He's joining us here at the Democratic National Convention. He's columnist for the Washington Post, author of Why Americans Hate Politics, and most recently, Stand Up, Fight Back, Republican Toughs, Democratic Wimps, and the Politics of Revenge. E.J. Dionne, great to have you.
Great to be here with these Republican toughs, too.
In your face.
They look very civilized.
Very civilized. But you know, it is a tough line that's come out of the Republican bunker, as Scott Hoganson calls it this week, just a couple of blocks from here. What do you make of the line of attack that's emerged in this campaign from the Republicans. It's emerging again this week.
I just want to make a point about the how technically proficient everybody's getting. Dana Bash on CNN did a story tonight about the counter-spin office that the Democrats have set up to reply to the office that the Republicans have set up. And we
spin,
decided,
counter-spin, triple
well, tonight
spin.
Dana and I decided that the new innovation will be a third office to reply to the reply to the original attack. And
you
it'll create a lot of jobs
in here.
For a lot of jobs for political
it's
hacks.
Part of the
I like political
job
hacks.
Program, right?
It's, yeah, it's excellent. You know, I think the Republicans basically want to argue two things. And in many ways, these are very old attacks. They want to argue he's a liberal from Massachusetts. They want to say simultaneously he's a really strong liberal and he's a flip-flopper. And they want to convince people that Kerry is an equivocator who's not strong enough to lead the country in a time of terrorism, which is why when you go out in that hall, the word strong pops up on the screen practically every other minute. And you've heard the word strength
sure does.
Over and over again. But I think in some ways the conversation is outdated because the old line was Democrats are moving to the center and trying to look moderate. Democrats are out there actually trying, I think, to change the conversation and actually move the conversation away from the right. And I think that's why, for example, Obama's speech was effective and Clinton's speech was effective. When they go out there and say the Republicans are trying to divide the country, what they're trying to do is raise the price for Republicans in the fall when Republicans bring up social issues, when they bring up so-called values issues, and when they bring up the patriotism issue. It's very striking that Barack Obama got up there and said patriots supported the war in Iraq and patriots opposed the war in Iraq. So I think they are trying to change the conversation, which I think they have to do if they're going to change the country in the long haul.
Does that build a strong wall for them? Is it going to keep the Republicans from battering on that line anyway?
Well, it won't keep the Republicans from battering on that line. They're going to keep battering. I think what the Republicans are trying to do is there's a big chunk of votes out there, I think, who are thinking about firing President Bush. Some of them are almost ready to do it. The Republicans are trying to build a wall between John Kerry and those voters. Kerry's job is to tear down that wall, if I may quote. Ronald Reagan, Democrats are doing that a lot
these
days. It is. And he's doing that partly by looking likable, but partly by looking strong, and partly by saying, when you hear them, when you hear the Republicans, listen carefully, because they're being dividers. They're not talking about substantive issues such as health care, education, and the like. And we'll see if it works. I think it's a more creative strategy than the old strategy of just trying to move to the center and presenting yourself differently.
We are live at the Democratic National Convention looking at the GOP pushback, the Republican counterpunch. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Carl is calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Great to have you, Carl. What's on your mind?
Well, a moment ago, before you took a break, you asked what we think are John Kerry's vulnerabilities, and my goodness, there's a long list. I'll be glad to keep trying to, you know, brief if you need me to, but
Give us the top of your pops there, Carl.
Okay. Well, for one thing, I've been trying to pay, you know, fairly close attention despite working 12-hour days, but I've not heard, and maybe he'll come up surprises, you know, when he speaks as the concluding speaker, of course, but I've not heard any plans, any ideas. Basically, his campaign commercial says, I'm for health care and education, and, well, goodness, I mean, who in the world, you know, thinks that schools and doctors are bad things? I mean, you know, Bush has very early in his presidency proposed and persuaded Congress to pass the biggest increase in federal education spending in the history of the country. And
Carl, let me ask you, where do you get your news? TV?
Where do I get my
newspapers?
News?
Yeah.
Papers, Newsweek, Time, U.S. News, World Report, TV.
So you're out there. You're vacuum cleaning it all up, and you don't see the details.
AM radio.
From John Kerry. We've got it, Carl. Thanks for your call. Matthew Continetti, how about it? You know there are details behind, like them or not, behind a number of these proposals, health care and so on. Carl's not hearing them. He doesn't think they're there. He's hearing slogans. I guess you could say this about any politician at a certain level, but...
Well, it's funny. The other day, a columnist named Liz Marlendes had a piece in the Christian Science Monitor where she talked about that the task for Kerry over the next few days, and especially in his speech tomorrow, is to lay out his message. And when you talk to some Democratic strategists, they're uncertain what exactly Kerry's message is. So far, he's been content to be the anti-Bush. But the question tomorrow will be, is this a man that Americans can vote for as a person? Do they like him enough? Are they confident enough with him as a leader, that they can vote for him as an individual.
So can he deliver the details that Carl's looking for and make the case for himself as a man, as a leader, in the same address?
Perhaps. I mean, I think in this case, the message, the general message of strength and security is going to be more important than the minute details, upon which, when you actually look at the party platforms, Bush and Kerry agree on a lot. We need to internationalize Iraq. We need to take the fight to the terrorists on a lot of levels. Foreign policy, they agree, not so much domestic.
Scott Hoganson, we've got a caller saying, well, he's not hearing the details. But yet there are details out there, and you guys are digging into them. You're taunting the Democrats over the details.
I don't know if we're taunting them. I think these are details in legislation, and I think issues relating to legislation are fair game. And one thing that the gentleman from North Carolina did mention, you mentioned details, he mentioned that, factually, that this president has allocated, fought for, and secured more money for K-12 education in one term than Bill Clinton did in two terms. This is the first president who has fought for and secured federal funding for embryonic stem cell research in the history of the Republic, okay? There are a lot of details out there that aren't getting out, and that will be part of our job at the convention as well. We are going to be telling folks and showing and demonstrating the many successes of the first 3.5 years of the Bush administration. And then when that has been done, we're going to be putting out the vision for the next 4 years, how we're going to continue the economic recovery, how we're going to continue prosecuting the war on terror and so forth.
No doubt. They'll all be there in New York. EJ, what about this issue of the mano a mano issue? George Bush is pretty well defined by his actions in office at this point. John Kerry, by all polls, still working to define himself. How do you think he's going to come out of this week, out of his speech tomorrow night? What's the man-to-man comparison to look like? Two ready leaders here?
Right. Well, I think Kerry will come out fine for two reasons. One is I think that his image, the military image, a number of veterans around here. Tonight on the floor, you had firefighters for Kerry. If you're going to have one union with you after 9/11, the firefighters were a pretty good one, and they were playing that up. But the other thing is the famous George W. Bush line, people have always misunderestimated me. Kerry is very lucky because everybody in this hall, Republicans, even in their spin room and Democrats, are saying, oh, Kerry really isn't that good a speaker. You know, Clinton will outshine him. Now Obama will outshine him. Well, there's another Bush who had that same problem, this president's father in 1988. And Ronald Reagan spoke at that convention, one of the great communicators. And will Ronald Reagan overshadow Vice President Bush? Well, he came out and gave a really good and effective speech. I think that if you're in this game at all and you can't succeed in an acceptance speech, when you're talking to the most sympathetic crowd you will ever face
on the planet
all year long, then you shouldn't be in this game, and you probably would never have gotten to that podium in the first place. So I think John Kerry will do just fine, and the more negative talk there is about him, in a way, the better it is for him.
E.J. Dionne, thanks for being with us
tonight.
Great
pleasure to be with you.
E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and author of Stand Up, Fight Back. Matthew Continetti, Scott Hoganson, stand by. We're talking tonight about the GOP pushback to the Democratic National Convention message. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. What's the Democrats' best answer to the GOP counterattacks? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are broadcasting live again tonight from the Democratic National Convention in Boston. We'll have the action from the floor. And we're looking tonight at the Republican pushback to this convention, to the messages coming out of the Democratic corner this week, the GOP counterpunch. In a few moments, Dennis Kucinich will be stepping to the podium, and we will turn to the podium when he does. In the meantime, you can join the conversation. How much kick, how much credibility do you hear in the GOP counterpunch? Are the Republican attack lines onto something? Is John Kerry a flip-flopper or a wise, discerning leader? What's the Democrats' best answer to the GOP counterattack? Whose points hit home the hardest? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been talking with Scott Hoganson, spokesman for the Republican National Committee in Boston, punching bag this week, with Matthew Continetti, columnist for the Conservative Weekly Standard out of Washington. And joining us now from Washington, Charles Black, Republican political strategist, a senior advisor to Presidents Reagan and the first President Bush. He also served on President George W. Bush's 2000 campaign as political advisor and spokesman. Good evening and welcome, Charles Black.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
It's great having you again. You've been listening on watching, no doubt, the convention this week and the Democrats here. How do you think they're doing, Charles Black? How vulnerable or the opposite is John Kerry going to emerge from this week?
Well, you know, so far I haven't seen anything in the convention that's going to really improve Kerry's position with the voters. What we've seen so far is, hey, you guys, we're going to have a positive convention, and then most of the speakers making negative, vicious personal attacks on President Bush. President Clinton, for example, said, you know, beware of the Republicans. They are dividers. Then proceeded to make a long speech promoting class warfare. You know, Bill Clinton didn't even promote class warfare when he was a candidate himself, but I guess that's what the Kerry people wanted him to do. So, you know, the Bush bashing they've done so far does not address the main problem they have, which is making John Kerry into an acceptable alternative to the president. So far, they haven't presented much about him. They certainly have not, as your previous guests have commented, talked about his 20-year voting record or his activities in the United States Senate. They can't talk about it. He's running from it now.
Let's take a quick call. John is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, John. You're on the air.
That's me?
Yes, John. You're on, my friend.
All right. Thanks. The whole idea of this top 2% not deserving to keep their money, it's not just their money. It's me as a customer and me as a worker who needs that. And I don't understand that the logic that the left wing seems to think that it's better in political hands for me, the worker, to have that money from that top 2% or anybody above me to have it in political hands. And how much is enough? Like John Kennedy lowered it 20%. Is Kennedy a bad guy for doing that? John Kennedy, that is?
And what about the deficit, John? As a working man, as you describe yourself, what about that deficit that you're going to also be paying on? Maybe your kids and grandchildren will be paying on. Does that bother you?
I believe that zero-sum thinking is false, that when you have more taxes back in the hands of the people who create the income growth, they have to invest it back in the economy, whereas the politicians are going to dump it down the drain. They're the ones that cause the deficit.
John, we've got it, and thanks for your call. Charles Black, how about it? We have heard this week attacks on those tax cuts as being heavily loaded toward high-income Americans and a promise John Kerry's making to reverse some of those tax cuts on American households making over $200,000 a year. Of course, that's a very small percentage of the American public, so does that play well politically?
Well, you know what? The people in that tax bracket, though, it's a very high percentage of small businesses and family farms. When John Kerry talks about increasing taxes on that top bracket, it's a lot of small businesses and family farms who provide, small businesses provide the great majority of new jobs in this country. It's not just some wealthy fat cat that he's trying to tax. But the other point that cannot be lost here is President Bush cut everyone's taxes across the board. It was across the board. It applied to everyone who paid income taxes. And Kerry might say he wants to tax the rich to give to the poor. You know, the poor in this country aren't looking for redistribution of wealth. The poor want to be rich, too. That's why we have a free enterprise system, and that's why the investment in the economy to produce jobs allows people to gain wealth, the opportunity society. That's what the president's for.
And you think that's still working? You don't think Americans see an economy out of whack? We see the most recent numbers, BMWs and Cadillacs selling like crazy. Sales at Walmart down because there's just not the income among those lower income ranks. You don't think that's bothering folks, Charles Black?
Well, I think there's some people in some states and some areas that don't see the economy back yet. But we cannot deny that we have the fastest economic growth in almost 20 years since Bush became president. Take-home pay is up 11%. Jobs are increasing at a dramatic rate every month. The recovery will eventually reach the rest of the country. Everybody knows, economists of all stripes know, that the way to stop a recovery or slow it down is to increase taxes.
And that's the Republican position, that if Kerry does that, that's exactly what will happen. On the floor of the convention hall right now, Dennis Kucinich has stepped to the podium. He, of course, was the last opponent of John Kerry to drop out of contention for the presidency just a few days ago, and has said he is now throwing his support to John Kerry. He's getting a standing ovation on the convention hall floor. music is booming, as it's booming all the time here now, and the delegates are on their feet for Dennis Kucinich. We're talking with Scott Hoganson, spokesman for the Republican National Committee, Matthew Continetti of the Weekly Standard, and Charles Black joining us by phone from New York. Dennis Kucinich is now at the microphone. Let's hear what he has to say to his fellow Democrats.
We Democrats in convention, united, we who built this country with the sweat of our brow, we, the steel workers, the auto workers, the miners, the communication workers, the laborers, the people who teach the children, who drive the trucks, who clean the streets, who hunger for justice, who nurse the sick, who represent the oppressed, who serve the meals, who stand at checkout counters, who build the bridges, who sleep under the bridges, who hunger for food. We, who put out the fires, who police the streets, who protect this nation and the freedoms we celebrate tonight, the soldiers, the sailors, Marines, and Air Force. We, Democrats, assembled, united for John Kerry, united to recreate our nation with the power of the ballot, to transform it with the power of the human heart and the power of the human spirit. Out of many, we Democrats are one. We are left, right, center. We are one. We are black, white, red, brown, yellow. We are one. One for jobs and health care. One for peace and fair trade. One for our children's future. And we are one for John Kerry.
Dennis Kucinich with a big smile and a Walt Whitman-esque litany of American people and traits and jobs here. The crowd on its floor, him and John Kerry on his feet.
We will carry America for Kerry, and Kerry will carry America for us. We remember who we are. We are the party of the people. We are the party of FDR and the New Deal, the party of JFK and the New Frontier, of Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, of Martin Luther King's dream, of Robert Kennedy's striving spirit, of Cesar Chavez's Si Se Puede, of Eleanor Roosevelt and human rights, infused with the passion of Paul Wellstone from Minnesota, the humanity of Jimmy Carter from Plains, the engaging brilliance of Bill Clinton from Hope, and we are the party of John Kerry, the next great Democratic president of the United States.
Dennis Kucinich addressing the hall, the delegates on their feet again. He will go on to talk about the Democrats bringing a victory of the American people over fear, a victory of hope over despair, of faith over cynicism. Matthew Continetti with the Weekly Standard. This theme of the Democrats standing for hope and Republicans standing for fear has been drummed up a lot this week. How do you think it plays? Are the Republicans worried about that line?
Well, it plays very well to the Democratic base, and what's interesting about Kucinich's speech is that he's speaking to a captive audience. You know, the New York Times published a poll of the Democratic delegates on Sunday, which went through all the major political issues. Overwhelmingly, the delegates attending this convention don't believe that the war in Iraq was worth fighting. I think the number is between only 2 and 3% actually think the war was worth fighting. So they're going to respond very well to Kucinich's message. But I think the task before Kerry is to show that the Democratic Party assembled here is the party of Kerry, not Kucinich.
Charles Black, this question, though, of hope and fear, Democrats have made a lot of hope being their stock in trade. They paint George Bush with a surround of John Ashcroft and the... and the glowering Dick Cheney as the party of fear?
Well, you know, that's not going to work for them. The fact is that Americans do have to fear terrorism. We're in a worldwide war against terrorism. And people credit the president with strong leadership in that war. They like the role the vice president's played. John Ashcroft has been subject to attack because of the Patriot Act, according to the Democrats. But what are they talking about? There have been no complaints about violations of civil liberties under the Patriot Act. As we get into the fall and some of these issues come out, Kerry's on very shaky ground to criticize the president and his administration for their performance in the war on terrorism.
Scott Hoganson, news from Iraq today, pretty tough. A lot of deaths, a big explosion. What is it, something like 70 dead there, maybe another 50 wounded. U.S. soldiers continue to die. Interestingly, the Democrats not making so much of that in very explicit terms this week, but it sits out there for the Democrats and the Republicans. How do you think the war is going to play out as this campaign season rolls forward toward November 2nd?
I was in Iraq last March and last April as the war broke out, and since that time I don't think there's ever been a day where there hasn't been some bad news coming out of that country. There's been a lot of good news coming out of that country in terms of the rebuilding that has been done by the United States-led coalition. You know, that's just another one of the misnomers that we hear from so many Democrats about the, quote, going it alone. Nothing could be further from the truth. I was over there and I met soldiers from Czechoslovakia, the Slovak, the Czech Republic.
Yeah, but
Poles,
Americans can look and see
right.
What's what,
but,
how many,
you know,
of who.
Iraq policy aside, I think that one of the best illustrations I could imagine regarding support for the theme of an extreme makeover came from Denis Kucinich talking about how we are right, left, and center. I'm sorry, but there's not that many people in here who are going to be allowed to speak on a pro-life basis to this convention. There's nobody in here who's going to stand at that podium and talk about lower taxes. When Denis Kucinich says we are left, right, and center, that is nothing more than an extreme makeover. This is left and somewhat left of center, and that's not what they're saying. I'm sorry, but it just kind of cracked me up.
Well, Kucinich does define, I guess, one face of this party,
He's a good speaker. I mean, he's good at preaching to the choir. I'll give him credit for that.
He's beaming there right now. Matthew Continetti, of course, the polls are very close on where John Kerry and George Bush stand right now. How do you see this playing out? Is President Bush, the Democrats have been playing for the center, perhaps Kucinich aside, perhaps not. Is President Bush also going to have to play for the center, or is he going to make a play for more and more and more of the base, the Republican base, to be squeezed out?
I think you'll see in the convention next month that Bush will be playing toward the center. He's going to be stalking the podium with national leaders like Rudy Giuliani, Arnold Schwarzenegger. In fact, there was a mini controversy in the Republican Party last week over conservative senators like Sam Brownback of Kansas not being allowed to speak. He'll be speaking on the podium now. But
As will Rick Santorum.
So the parties are going to be both playing toward the center because that's where this very small number of undecided voters resides. And it's an open question as to who they're going to break for. Matthew Dowd, President Bush's chief pollster, expects the Kerry campaign to get as much as a 15-point bounce from this convention. I don't see that happening.
Well, of course, the Dems have said less. They've said maybe 5%.
Yeah, 5 to 8. They're downplaying expectations.
Yep.
We'll see if they reach them.
Well, there it is. Republicans watching carefully, keeping their powder dry and using some of it already this week. Scott Hoganson, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Scott Hoganson, spokesman for the Republican National Committee, bunkered just outside the Democratic National Convention. Matthew Continetti with the Weekly Standard, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Charles Black in Washington, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Live from the Democratic National Convention in Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.